Okay, good morning, and thank you all very much for coming. We are on the very bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Beis at the next Mishnah. We're talking about Avodah Zarah items. The last Mishnah said that if you find all sorts of objects that have on them images of a moon, a sun, a dragon, that's Avodah Zarah. So what happens, what do you do with Avodah Zarah objects? Rabbi Yossi says, Shochek, you grind them down, Vizor LaRuach, and you throw the dust into the wind. O Matul Yam, or you can drop them into the Dead Sea, that way no one will get benefit from it. Amrulo, the sages said to Rabbi Yossi, Afunasa Zevel, if you grind it up and throw it to the wind, it's going to become fertilizer to help something grow. And the verse says, "Shenamar lo yidbak biyadcha mu'um min acherim." There should not be glued to your hand. There shouldn't be attached to your hand anything from that which has to be destroyed. So when you have avodah zarah, you can't enable someone to benefit from it as a fertilizer. So grinding it up is not enough. You have to throw it into the sea. That's the view of the Chachamim. So Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Amar Lahem Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says back to the Chachamim, how could you say that grinding up Avodah Zarah is not enough? Because when you grind something up, it becomes fertilizer. But the verse says, Vescha Taschem, Asher Asisem Esa Egel. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people, this terrible crime that you did, the golden calf, Lokachti, I took it. I burned it in fire. For Ekos Oso Tchon Hetev, and I beat it up, grounding it very well. Adashir Dak Lafar, until it became, you know, little granules, as small, as thin as dirt. And I threw this ground golden calf into the river that's coming down from the mountain. So you see, Moshe's not worried that if he throws it into the river is going to carry it to a field and deposit it in a field, and it's going to help the field grow. Apparently, once it's ground, it isn't a problem, even though it could be, in theory, fertilizer. Amrulo, the sages said back, no, Misham Rai, you think that's a proof? Hayrei Omer, the verse says that not only did Moshe grind the golden calf and throw the powder into the river, Vayazer al pnei ha'mayim, he scattered it over the face of the waters. Vayashkus pnei Yisrael, and he made the Jewish people lay down and drink from this river that had golden calf powder into it. You know why? Lo niskavin elabot kon kesotos. He was testing them like the straying wife. The Torah tells us that if a married woman is a little too friendly with another man, and her husband is jealous, and the husband warns her not to be alone with that man.
Sota waters.
And then she goes and she's alone with that man. But we're not 100% sure about what happened there. She's claiming that nothing happened. The husband is saying that he suspects something did happen with the other man. She was there long enough for something to happen. She gets taken to the Mishkan, or when we have a Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash, and then there is a special potion of water with dirt from the Mishkan, as well as ink, the ink of the parchment that had written on it the whole Sota section that's erased into the water. She's given the water to drink, and if something did happen between her and the man, her stomach will blow up. She'll die. If nothing happened, on the contrary, she'll be blessed for having been falsely suspected. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know exactly who had worshipped in front of the golden calf. So when he ground up the golden calf and he put it into the waters, they then drank. And then those who were guilty of being disloyal to the ultimate spouse, to Hashem, their stomachs blew up. And those who weren't guilty and falsely suspected, they received a blessing. So it's not that the fertilizer, that it could be used as fertilizer, it wasn't being used as fertilizer somewhere else. It was that it was now going to be Sota waters. That's not a proof. Yeah, question.
Then we learned yesterday that the Avodah Zarah cannot be broken by a Jew. It has to be a Gentile to break it. Now you're telling us now we could grind them? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, so one second. Grinding seems to be that it's gone. It's not avodah zarah anymore.
Doesn't it have to be broken first by a Gentile and then we grind it? Or what?
Well, that would be to take away its status. You're saying, now that you're taking away its status, this is, doesn't really count. This is not really much. I mean, this is not normal fertilizer. Normal fertilizer is biological waste. This is a ground earthenware that fertilizes a little bit. That doesn't count. That's the discussion.
Rabbi, just to clarify for a second, sorry. We have an obligation to break avodah zarah. Correct.
That's correct.
It's just a matter of using
to shut their own.
To use that which is broken. That's right. Okay, says the Gemara. Now we're going to have a whole bunch of back and forths about this question. Is the ground up of avodah zarah prohibited because it's fertilizer, that's Rabbi Yossi, or not? So Amar Lahem Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says, let's go to the prophets. In the prophets is a story about a king, a righteous king, whose name was Asa. So Asa removed all the idols that his ancestors had put up. And one of the things that he did was like this. The Gamacha, and also Macha, who was his mother. Eim Asa HaMelech. Hey, Sirami Gvira, he removed her from being the queen, from having power. Why? Asher Asta, because she had made La Asherah Mifletzes. She had made to the Asherah, to the idolatrous tree, this monster. And he takes the Mifletzes, and Vayadek, he grinds it up, Vayisrof, and he burns it, Benachal Kidron, into the Kidron River. So one second, how could he grind it up and then throw it into the river? We just said that if, according to Rabbi Yossi, if something's ground, according to the Chachamim, if something is ground up, it's still fertilizer. You can't get anything from that which is destroyed. You're getting something. So again, Amrulo, the sages said back, Misham Raya, you think that's a proof against us? He's throwing it into the river of Kidron. Nachal Kidron ain't a magadol tzmachem. Nothing grows over there. He's not getting any benefit. So Rabbi Yossi says, is that true? Velo, is it true that nothing grows in Nachal Kidron? Nachal Kidron is the river that comes out of the Beis HaMikdash. Well, Tana, we learned in a brisa. Elu ve'elu, both the blood of karbanos that had been thrown on the outer altar, as well as the blood of Yom Kippur that had been thrown on the peroches, Misarvin ba'ama, they get mixed together in the pipe, in the ama that was in the azara, in the pipe in the azara. V'yotzin l'nachal Kidron, and they go out to the Kidron River. V'nimkarm l'ganon l'zevel, and people used to pay money for them to be able to use this bloodstream as fertilizer. U'malin bahen. And if somebody didn't pay and he just benefits from this blood, he would be violating Me'ilah. So you see that in Nachal Kidron, you had all sorts of, you know, fields and plants. And that's why they would use the blood of the Beis HaMikdash as fertilizer. So how could Rabbi Yossi say that in Nachal Kidron nothing's growing? So that's why when Asa ground up idols and threw it into Nachal Kidron, it was okay. Because nothing's growing anyway. So Gemara says, well, Makomos, Makomos, Yeshba. There are different spots within the Kidron River Valley. Yesh, Makom, Shemagadlin, Botzmachim. There are some places where plants grow. Yesh, Makom, Shemagadl, Tzmachim. There are places where nothing grows. So according to Rabbi Yossi, according to the Chacham, that is, according to the Chachamim, when he ground up the idols, including the idol that his mother made, he threw it into the river to the spot where nothing grows. And that's why it wasn't a problem. But if it be the place where things are growing, the Chacham say, once you grind it, you can't throw it there, because grinding is going to become fertilizer. So now we talk about that story of Asa a little bit. My Miflatzta, why was the idol called her monster? Amr Yehuda Dahama Maflilitzanusa. Miflatzta is the word Mafli. It was like an astonishing, an astounding form of leitzanut, an astounding form of lack of seriousness. Kedetani Rav Yosef, as Rav Yosef taught, what was this idol? Kimin Zachrus Astala. She made out of this idol this massive male organ. And she, the queen, Haitaniv Elatlo B'chol Yom, would have intercourse with this male organ on this tree every day. So this was monstrous. This monstrosity is what King Asa took down, ground up, and threw into the Nachal Kidron. Amar Lan Reb Yossi. All right, going back to this question. Again, according to Reb Yossi, when you grind up, it's already fine. No issues anymore. Chacham say if you ground it up, you ground up an idol, this is still an issue because it could become fertilizer. So you have to throw it into the Red Sea. You can't just throw it to the wind or put it into a river. Amar Reb Yossi. Reb Yossi says, we know about another great Jewish king. Alok Far Namra tells about King Chizkiyahu, that he got rid of all of the Avodah Zarah. So when he was getting rid of all the idols, so he actually destroyed a great historical artifact. In Parshas Chukas, the Torah tells us that there were snakes that attacked the Jewish people. And God told Moshe to make Nechash HaNechoshes, to make a copper snake and put it on a pole and let everybody look at the snake and be healed. So it says that Chizkiyahu broke that. V'chites Nechash HaNechoshes Asher Asa Moshe. That Chizkiyahu ground up the copper snake that Moshe had made. Now, if he ground it, he presumably didn't grind it and throw it into the Dead Sea, he ground it and threw it to the wind, like what Reb Yossi is recommending. So apparently he's not worried about fertilizer. So the sages said back, it's not a proof. Misham Rai, you think that's a proof to your opinion that you can grind up an idol and throw it to the wind? Reu Omer, that's really not an idol. It's not an idol, the snake. It's Moshe Rabbeinu's snake. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe asay lechasar. Hashem tells Moshe, make for yourself a copper snake. Lecha means, as we find in Masechet Sukkah, mishelcha, from that which you own. So it's Moshe Rabbeinu's snake. So now that people later are worshiping Moshe Rabbeinu's snake, they can't make it prohibited. Ein adam oser davar sheino shalo. A person doesn't have the ability to create a prohibition on that which he doesn't own. The people didn't own it. It was Moshe Rabbeinu's snake. So if it's Moshe Rabbeinu's, it's his possession. They can't make it prohibited through their worship. So if it really didn't have the status of Avodah Zarah, why did Chizkiyahu break it up? No, Hasan Bedinu de Ketuzi La'avitzarach. He really didn't have to break it up. It wasn't Avodah Zarah. They can't make it prohibited. But he saw that there were Jews who were making a mistake because of this snake, and they were worshipping. So they were doing the sin, although the snake didn't have the status of Avodah Zarah. So he got up and he broke it. All right, again, we're going about this question. Is a ground-up idol still a problem or not? So Amalim Reb Yossi. Reb Yossi holds that a ground-up idol is no longer a problem. Chacham say it's still a problem because it's fertilizing. Balok Farnamra, but the verse says about David HaMelech. When David HaMelech defeated the Plishtim, Vayazvu Sham et Atzabehem. And they, the Philistines, left there their idols. Vayisaim David v'anashav. And David and his people, nisaim. So what does it mean, nisaim? So simply understood, they ground it, and they threw it to the wind. They let the wind bear it. They let the wind carry it. So Gemara says, really? My mashma. Dahai vayisaim David. Lishna d'zruihu. How do we know that the word Vayisa'im is from the word Zorev, throwing to the wind. So my answer is, could him attack him Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef was an expert in the translations because he was blind. He couldn't see the Hebrew. So he only knew things from translation. The verse says, Tizareim v'ruach tisa'im. Attack him. We translate that as Tizrinun, scatter them, the enemies of the Jews. V'ruach tatal tlinun. And a wind will carry them to all the different sides. So you see, Tisa'im needs to be borne by the wind. Amulo, the sages say back to Reb Yossi, Misham Raya, you think that that's what's going on there? That David HaMelech is grinding up the idols of the Philistines and then scattering that ash, that powder to the wind, and you see that the powder, once it's a powder, it's not a problem anymore. You think that's what's going on? Harei Omer, but the verse says, and Divrei Hayam about that story, that the Philistines left their idols, and David said, "Vayisrafu ba'esh." They should be burned in the fire. Amidah lo k'sev, and it doesn't say, "Vayisrafim v'yisayim." It doesn't say that he burned them and he then, you know, let the wind bear them, had the wind carry them. It just says Vayisaim. Shmamina Vayisaim Mamish. That means Vayisaim means he actually carried them to benefit from them. So one second, the Gemara says, well, your last point ends up with a contradiction. We come up from Kashukra Adadis. Now you have a contradiction. In Divrei Hayamim, you're saying that David HaMelech burned them. In the book of Shmuel, you're saying that David HaMelech carried them. So what was it? Either way, it's not what Rabbi Yossi says, that he ground them up and he let the wind carry the powder. Answer the Gemara, Kid Rav Huna. The answer is what Rav Huna said. Rav Huna had asked this contradiction. Ksiv, it says, Vayomer David Yisrafu Ba'esh. David said, burn them in fire. Ksiv, Vayisayim. Then it says that David carried them away. So lo kash, it's not a contradiction. There were lots of idols that the Philistines left. So Kan kodem Shaba Iti Agiti. Before this non-Jew, Itai Hagiti came, David was burning idols. Then, Kam Yachar Shavu Itai Hagiti. Then, Itai Hagiti came. When Itai Hagiti came, we could do what Baruch proposed. When Itai Hagiti came, we said, okay, Itai, say that these idols are nothing. When Itai said that the idols were nothing, then they were nothing, and then already David could carry them off. And we see that David did carry things off from his wars, sometimes idolatrous things. For example, David took the crown of the king of Rabat Bnei Amon, from the crown of Ammon. It says there, Vayikach Hasateres Malkam Yal Rosho, he took the crown of their king from his head, Umishkala Kikar Zahav. And its weight was a kikar, an entire loaf of gold. That's a lot to carry on your head, the Gemara is going to say. So Gemara says, Mishari, how could David and Amal take the crown? Yisuri Ananinu, this is an idolatrous item. You can't get any benefit from it. Rav Nachman answered, Itay Agiti ba, Itay Agiti came, Ubitlan, he annulled it before David took possession of it. One second, Mishkala kikar zahav, its weight was a kikar of gold. Echi matzi manachla, how could he put such a thing on his head? I'm Rav Yehuda Marav, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, David. You know, he never did put it on its head. It could have been on the head. It was in the shape of something that could be on the head, but it was way too heavy to put on the head. Rabbi Yosef Chanina said, Evan Shoeves Haisaba, there was a magnet in it, Davadarala, that would cause this crown to actually be suspended. So it wasn't literally weighing on his head. There was some type of what's that? Floating. It was floating. Yeah, there was a floating. They had the first drones. He had a crown drone over his head. They were very advanced technologically. Rebbe Lazar didn't weigh a kikar of gold. That's very hard then to wear it. Rebbe Lazar Amar Evan Yekara Isaba Shashava Kikar Zab. It had a precious stone in it that's worth a kikar of gold. Okay, now talking about the crown that David HaMelech wore. The verse says in Tehillim, Zos Haisali, this was for me, Ki Pikudecha Natzarti, for I kept your command. My kamer, what does that mean? This is what David HaMelech is saying. B'schar shepikudecha Natzarti, because I kept your command, Zos Haisali Le'edus, this crown was the testimony that I am rightfully the king. My Edusa, how did the crown provide testimony? I'm Rabbi Shimon Levi explained, Shaya manicha b'makom tefillin. He would put it on his head where he puts the tefillin. V'holamto, and it would fit onto his head. So one second, how could David then have his crown on? V'abaya nuchi tefillin, but you're supposed to be putting on tefillin. David also has to wear tefillin. I'm Rabbi Shimon Barav Yitzchak, makom yesh b'rosh roi laniach bo shnei tefillin. There's enough space on the head to put on two pairs of tefillin. There's a whole discussion in the post whether that means two pairs of tefillin side by side or two pairs of tefillin, one in front and one behind. The Divrei Chaim, he says it means two pairs of tefillin side by side. So he said this, that everybody, you know, we try to get the tefillin precisely between the eyes, up by the nose. It's not really necessary because there's room there for two pairs of tefillin. So if it's a little bit off, it's also okay. But others say, no, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean side by side. It means two pairs of tefillin, one and then behind it. So it still has to be in the right spot. It's just saying that behind it, you could have another pair of tefillin, room for another box. Side by side or one behind the next? Well, they make very small tefillin, so try to get both ideas. Okay, so talking about this crown, it says about Yoash. They took out the son of the king, the son of Ahaziah, Yoash, and they put on him the crown and the testimony. So Nezer Zuklila, Nezer is the crown. Edus, what does it mean? Testimony of the Marav, Edus of the base David. This crown is always a proof that you were from David's household. Because Kalaroy Lamalchus Holamto, if you were deserving to be the king, then the crown would fit on the head. But those who are not deserving to be the king, the crown would not stick there. It's somewhat of a miraculous crown. The verse also says, Adoniah ben Chagit, this was the son of David who made a rebellion. Adoniah, the son of Chagit, mitnaseh lemor. He was arrogant and filled with himself, saying, Ani emloch, I'm going to rule. I'm Rav Yudah Marav. Rav Yudah said in the name of Rav, shemitnaseh lehomo, that he was... he was so arrogant, he thought he could put this crown on. But he was an example of where the crown was quite informative. The crown would not stick on his head. Wouldn't fit. I'm talking about Adoniah. The verse says, Vayaslo rechav ufar Hashem. He made for himself a chariot and horsemen. V'chamishim ish ratzim lefanav, and 50 men to run in front of him. How do you make men to run in front of you? Myra Busa, what's the special thing about these men? So Tanu lived in a brisa. What Adoniah did was kulam etule tcho. He took out their spleens. V'chakuke kaposa raglaim hayu, and he took off. He carved out the inside of the palms of their legs to make them run faster and not be slowed down. Okay, next Mishnah. Daf mem dalid amud beis. All right, a conversation between Rabban Gamliel and a certain Gentile. Sha'al Proclus ben Pluspus. Proclus, this, I guess, new Christian, son of Pluspus, asked this Rabban Gamliel ba'ako. Asked Rabban Gamliel in Akko. Sha'yerochet pamechet shel Aphroditi. When he was bathing in the bathhouse, which had an idol, Aphrodite, in it. Amale, so he said to him, it says in your Torah, you can't have in your hand anything from that which has to be destroyed, which means you can't get any benefit at all from an idol. So this is the bathhouse of Aphrodite. How are you enjoying the bathhouse? Why are you bathing in the bathhouse of Aphrodite? Amalosim Gamliel answered, well, I can't give you a halachic answer in the bathhouse. Now I'll learn Torah here. We've got, sweat and people undressed. It's not a place for Torah. Okay, Ukishiyatsa, when he went out, Amarlo, he said, listen, Ani lo basi bigvula. I didn't come into its domain. He ba bigvuli. It came into my domain. In other words, it's not that there was the idol here and then the bathhouse. It was there was a bathhouse, and then they brought in the idol. The bathhouse is the bathhouse. It doesn't become the idol's bathhouse because they brought it in later. So then he said another idea. No one says that the bathhouse was made to beautify the Aphrodite idol. It's not that that's serving the idol. They say that the Aphrodite idol is what's going to beautify the bathhouse. So the bathhouse is a bathhouse, and I can bathe in it. And another thing Rabbi Gamliel said, if they'd give you a lot of money, even if they'd give you a lot of money, you wouldn't go into your Sistine Chapel of the Vatican and strip off your clothes, urinate, ejaculate, be a Balkari in front of it, because that's a sign of disrespect. This is a bathhouse. So, Zuomedes Alpiabiv, you know what's going on here with this Aphrodite idol? It's right on top of the irrigation canal of all the urine, the putrid waste. Everybody goes and they urinate in front of it. So this is not their God. There's no prohibition here. Lo ne'amar ela Eloheim. God, the Torah says, you know, don't respect their gods, don't get benefit from their gods. Eshenoeg bo mishum Eloa, things that they treat as a god. That's awesome. That's what you can't get benefit from. Eshenoeg bo mishum Eloa, but things that aren't treated as a god anymore. It's a toilet decoration. So Mutter, you're allowed to get benefit from that. That's not a god anymore. All right, so now questions on this story.
Well, we learned that sometimes that's how you...
The Gemara will ask that.
That's how they worship.
Yeah. The Gemara will ask that. The Gemara will answer. That's if that is the religion.
Right. This, the religion.
That's not the Aphrodite religion. So the Gemara says, hey, Chiyavidachi, how could Rabbi Gamliel tell them, listen, I can't give you an answer in the bathhouse. That also is halacha. You can't teach any halacha in the bathhouse. In every place you're allowed to think with words of Torah. Except for a bathhouse or a bathroom, you can't even think. Certainly you can't say. So you say, maybe he didn't speak in Hebrew. He just spoke it in Aramaic or in some secular formulation. If it's a secular matter, I don't know, something about politics, that you can say in Hebrew, in the holy language, in the bathhouse. But Dvarim Shel Kodesh, but holy things, namely a halacha, Asur Lomar B'Lashon Chol, you're not going to say them even in a secular way, in a secular language. So Tanu looked at a braisa, that kishiyatza amar lo emeshim v'merchatz. You're right, in the bathhouse he just ignored it. When he walked out, he said, listen, the reason why I ignored your question is that I can't tell you any halacha in the bathhouse. I'm Reb Chama Reb Yossi. I'm Reb Oshia Berebi. Reb Oshia Berebi said, Chama Reb Yosef quoted it, Shuva Gnuva Yeshiva Reb Gamliel Oso Hegmon. Reb Gamliel sort of deceived that fellow. It was a little bit of Gneva Stas, of deception. Because it wasn't really an answer. Vani, but I disagree with what Reb Oshia says. Ani Omer, I say, says Reb Chama Reb Yosef, Eina Gnuva was a good answer. Magnevuse, in what way is it a deception that it wasn't really an answer? To Karmelo, because Reb Gamliel said, Zuo Medes Al Pi Abiv V'Chol Adam Mashtim B'Fonei, this idol is standing in front of the canal with all the putrid waste, and everybody's urinating there. So you see, it's not an idol. So the question, the reason why it's really not such an answer is what Roger said. Who cares that somebody urinates in front of an idol? Amar Rava, Rava said, Pa'or Yochiach. The idol, Pa'or, you have a proof. Shemafar in the front of Bechol Yom. People urinate and do their excrement in front of it every day. Veino Batal doesn't lose its identity. The truth is that's not really a rejection. Ani Omeinu Gnuva. Reb Yosef says, that's not really a rejection. With Pa'or, that's the way it gets worshipped. So if it's the way it's worshipped, it doesn't reject it from being an idol. But with Aphrodite, it's not the way it's worshipped. Amar Abaye said, this is why Reb Oshia felt that Reb Gamliel's answer was a little bit deceptive. The Kamala, because Reb Gamliel says, I didn't come into its domain. He ba bigvuli, it came into my domain. So the Gemara says, even if you would go into its domain, who cares? We looked at a Mishnah, an idolatry that has a bathhouse or a garden. You can benefit from the bathhouse or from the garden. Shalom betova, as long as you don't have to be grateful and express thanks to the priests for it. But you can't benefit from them if you're going to have to praise them for getting the benefits. You see, you're allowed to go to a bathhouse of the idolatry, even if it belongs to the idolatry. But the truth is, that's really not so deceptive. When Rabbi Gamliel goes to a bathhouse without saying thank you, that's like other people going and having to say thank you, because the priests would be very excited that the prominent Jewish rabbi, Rabbi Gamliel, is in the bathhouse of their Avodah Zarah. So that's where Gamliel was right, that the issue is not based on it being a bathhouse that's automatically allowed, but because the bathhouse was here before Aphrodite, so it doesn't belong to Aphrodite, that's why he was allowed to go to the bathhouse. And a third explanation for the argument between Reb Oshia and Reb Chama Reb Yosef. If Simon bar Chia Amar Gnuv to Mahacha, this is why Rav Osher feels it's deceptive. So Kamalok Zim Gamliel says, "Zo Omedes Alabiv, this Aphrodite idol is standing over the putrid waste canal. The whole Adam Mashin Befanah, everybody urinates in front of it. V'chi Mashin Befanah May Havi, who cares that people are urinating?" But now, but the Mishnah says, "Rak b'faneh." If a person spits in front of an idol, hishtil b'faneh, or he urinates in front of the idol, gerera, or he drags it to a spot where it's got lots of excrement, the zarak, but a satzon, he threw the excrement at it. Harezu ain't a betela. That doesn't necessarily annul it. Vani omer, but Rav Yosef said, "No, ain't a gnuva. This is not deception." Awesome there, lefi shaitu rasachala. When a non-Jew throws these things at it, it's just because he got angry. When he got angry, he threw things. But then he's going to say, "Oh, no, I love it. I'm going to worship it again." But here, when it's called shaitu v'shaitu, it's not a one-time thing. It's every moment they're going to the bathroom in front of it. Zilzula kaima, that's certainly a nullification and disgracing it. Finally, Rabbi Bar Ula amar. Rabbi Bar Ula said, a fourth explanation. Gnuv to Mahacha. This is why Rav Oshia feels it was a deceptive answer. To Kamala, because Rabbi Gamliel tells the non-Jew, "Ein omrim nasa merchatz l'noy lafuditi." People don't say, "Let's make this bathhouse is the beautification of Aphrodite." Ela nasa Aphrodite noy lamerchatz. Rather, they say Aphrodite is the beautification of the bathhouse. So v'chi amar nasa merchatz l'Aphrodite noy. And even if people would say the bathhouse is the beautification of Aphrodite, my Havi, who would care? If a person says this house is dedicated to Avodah Zarah, or Kosel Avodah Kochavim, or this cup is dedicated to Avodah Zarah, Lo Amar Klum, that doesn't make it Avodah Zarah. Shein Hektish Avodah Kochavim, you don't have the status of consecration for Avodah Zarah. It has to be worshipped. V'ani Yomer Ein Gnuva, but I'm saying that's not a deceptive point. Nidi Tzur Lo Mitzra, even if by saying it's for the beauty of the Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't create a prohibition. But noimia ika. But if it is a beautification of Avodah Zarah, then we would say you're not allowed, because it's part of the Avodah Zarah. But since, because it's not a matter of his words, it's a matter of this, of the fact that it is a beautification. But since the bathhouse was there first, and then the Aphrodite idol was brought in to beautify the bathhouse, so therefore it never became prohibited. It was never part of the Avodah Zarah, and therefore I was allowed to use it. Thank you.